Chapter 10. Powerless. To expedite this progress to the higher levels of the Acropolis, Exassus sped to one of the vertical conveyors that had been shut down during the boarding attack. He summoned the car with a noospheric broadcast, and likewise set the container into motion for the battery level after he had curled his form into its cage-like interior. As we ascended, we could see as well as sense Olvatia's augmentati spread around the Acropolis. We had counted 140 warriors disembarking from the sky spears, and assumed a similar number had entered each of the bastions in the lower legs. 420 Skitari soldiers were nearly 100 more than we had commanded at the outset of the campaign, and quadrupled the troops now at his disposal. It occurred to her, as the conveyor slowed towards its destination, that we should demand the noospheric access codes for the League soldiery. Through the authority of Hierarchos, we was the Imperator Dominus, and all battle priests and Skitari personnel were viz to command. We resolved to demand that right when we spoke with Olvatia. If she was unwilling, then we would seek the authority of the Princeps Senioris, and we would either be vindicated or would stand down. The noncommittal nature of the current arrangement was unacceptable. Thus roused, Exassus ushered forth from the conveyor into the corridors around the immense turntable and gun tower of the main battery, and the flanking secondary gun towers, and a demi-squad outside the reinforced doors of the magazine itself. They stepped aside to allow Exassus to enter, but closed ranks as soon as we had passed within. We wondered if it was too late to summon any of his own soldiers, but decided that paranoid escalation would be seen as a sign of weakness rather than strength. We did not need to rely on such psychological trickery. We was Dominus by right of Hierarchos. The magazine would have been a four-story building in any other circumstance, consisting of an outer shell and the inner vault. The autoloader shaft ran from the center of the vault chamber to the main battery above. Numerous arched windows with glass stained with scenes from the calendar of the cult Metallica decorated the outer wall, which was lined by a shallow rampway that wound about its interior. The flashing light of the storm cast Olvatia's oval shadow from about halfway up the frontmost wall, hovering in front of a window triptych that displayed the culmination of disentropic labors. Exassus tried to extend a noospheric handshake, but was met with a feedback shriek from a suppressive field. Recoiling, we remembered the injunction for auditory exchange only. "I have no desire for subterfuge," Exassus announced as we started up the ramp.
"Nor I, Magos," Olvatia replied. "It is for that reason, and consideration for your prior service, that I requested this interface."
"Prior service? I think you mean current service, as I am still Imperator Dominus of the Casus Belli."
"If you wish to remain so, then you must listen to me carefully.
I analyze all inputs with equal rigor."
The turn of the rampway took Exassus out of sight of the other Magos, but her voice drifted back down the magazine hall.
"Your literalism has held you back, and now I see why. You fail to embrace all of the routes to higher wisdom. What you choose to mark as a failure, I see as a strength. Rather than split my efforts across many journeys to enlightenment, I have focused upon a narrower path with utter dedication."
We reached what would have been the second story, to find that Olvatia had floated down towards him along the ramp above and opposite his position. It was vexing to rely upon only short-ranged physical scans, but we boosted this suite of sensors to compensate for the lack of noospheric interaction between them. We heard the subtle whisper of the suspensor motors as Olvatia came closer.
"Then why have you not elevated yourself further in your time?"
"I think you are poorly qualified to lecture on the merits of achievement, Olvatia. Your service is disparate, uncharted. You have no great standing in the cult Metallica that I can discern, though I have looked for some reason that explains how you have attained the rank of Dominus."
"I can help you, Exassus."
She stopped a few meters ahead of her, and V halted also.
Ulvaeus' hair senses bristled upwards, though Exassus had no means or experience to interpret the meaning of the display.
More importantly, I can help you to help yourself.
You said that the security of the casus belli was under threat. I have surmised as much from the activity of late. What is your perspective on this phenomenon, and are you willing to make an alliance to rectify the situation?
I am surprised. I thought you would be ignorant of what was happening, and I certainly did not foresee that you would wish to add your support to the cause. Perhaps I have underestimated you.
I have not yet identified the cause to which you refer, Ulvaeus. It is obvious that two or more blocks within the Legio command echelon are in conflict, and that the casus belli and its Scitari cohort are somehow implicated. I do not know, nor care to know, the individuals involved, only to ensure that it ceases imperiling the casus belli. Not only the Imperator, but the battle group and the entire war effort as well are at risk if we do not return to Az-Kallak without delay.
Az-Kallak? A small consideration in the greater scheme, confined to this one world. The casus belli represents a far more prominent instrument of power. Perhaps your role as Scitari Dominus blinds you to the influence one can wield with the aid of an Imperator Titan, as you are such a redundant part of its operation.
The casus belli would have been destroyed only hours ago if not for the presence of my Scitari.
Your Scitari? Arrogance as well as ignorance, I see. You command only by the sufferance of your superiors. They are not your warriors. They are the defenders of the casus belli. If I were to command them, the Imperator would be no less secure.
Exassus searched for an argument to refute her assertion, but was forced to concede the point, his appendages drooping in acquiescence to her logic.
The role of Dominus is essential, not the incumbent, V conceded.
By that same logic, I am as apt to fulfill the rank as you, proceeding on the basis that this meander is a precursor to your demand that you assume the title of Dominus.
Ulvaeus drifted a little closer, frond senses tilting towards Exassus. V edged back, wishing to maintain the distance between them.
Your assumption is correct, Ulvaeus said.
Not an assumption, a presumption based on available data.
Your inability to assume is one of your greatest drawbacks. I have seen your data logs. You have removed all organic brain material, yet maintain other elements of your old body. It is a very peculiar thing to do, and it hampers your strategic oversight. You lack imagination.
Exassus shook the lensed apparatus that served as Vis' head.
You are mistaken. All action is governed by rules, even philosophy and human psychology. Imagination does not exist except as justification for illogical inferences.
There is a place where logic does not hold sway, where the imagination creates rules rather than bending to them.
Her voice was hushed, barely audible against the vehemence of the storm pounding the magazine windows.
Limitless potential, Exassus. Total freedom.
You speak of the warp.
I do. For millennia, our kind have studied the Empyrean, trying to unearth its principles, to discern data from madness, structure from the unstructured. It is folly to analyze the warp. One must instead embrace it.
This is the benefit of your imagination, to fool yourself that the energy of the warp can be a companion rather than a slave. No, the warp is anathema to the machine god. It exists only to be exploited, not befriended.
A sigh issued from the other Magos' speakers. Her body tilted backwards, as though looking up at the lightning that flashed multicolored through the stained glass.
The warp is spirit incarnate, Exassus. We have enslaved the souls of countless trillions to the machine god. What if I told you that the Omnissiah had sought another way, so that the warp and humanity might have been equals?
I would say that you have confused fable for fact.
Olvaceous sense hair stiffened into spikes, an unmistakable sign of annoyance. She said nothing for several seconds, during which Exasus reviewed the exchange thus far in an attempt to predict its trajectory and bring it to swifter conclusion.
As I declared previously, I refute your claim to Dominus, and I am willing to lay the decision upon the judgment of the Princeps Senioris.
I alone will judge in my favour, but it is not going to come to that. You are going to comply with my demands. Logic dictates it.
How so?
I am willing to use force to achieve my ends, even against you and your Scutari.
She did not have to say more. At the instant Olvaceous announced her willingness to engage in violence, Exasus had started four separate simulations based on the data V currently had access to. All of them ended swiftly in defeat for Viz soldiers. V tried three others, but the outcome was unchanged. Only the severity of the fighting and loss of life varied.
Your victory is an absolute certainty, but I can make it costly for you.
You will not. Conflict between our forces only weakens the defense of the Casus Belli. Lives expended in our dispute are wasted. Knowing the outcome, it would be illogical to expend your soldiers. One might even say it would be vanity.
Exasus's own calculations had arrived at the same conclusion, and verified it several times by the time she had finished talking. Only one question remained. A selfish one.
What is to happen to me, Olvaceous?
The League Magos slid through the air on gentle pulses of suspensor energy, trailing blue vapor. This time, Exasus allowed her to close almost within reach. V puffed out a cloud of red incense, a last assertion of independence.
You will divert all of your command codes and Scutari access systems to me, and officially denote my appointment as Imperator Dominus.
Of course, the defense system must be unified.
What happens after that is your choice, Exasus. You can serve as Imperator Secundus to me, or remain here under guard for the time being.
Exasus extended this sensor screen towards the armed figures at the magazine door below. With the neurospheric jamming in place, V could not summon his own warriors to effect a rescue.
There is a third option, said Exasus. I decline to cooperate, and you must kill me.
That would be a waste, Exasus. For all your simplicities, you are an experienced war commander who would continue to be useful to the Casus Belli. The resistance would be futile, as your demise would defer command status protocols to my systems.
Olvaceous pressed forward, forcing Exasus almost against the wall to allow her passage down the ramp. Her tendrils focused on her as she passed, like filaments drawn to a magnet, but she did not alter orientation or direction.
I thought your appearance was a collateral incident of this affair, but I see now it is part of the orchestration, said Exasus. You have exploited the situation with efficient ruthlessness and left me no option but to comply.
Exasus extended a data spike, and Olvaceous stopped, parting two metallic segments to reveal a matching port. Exasus inserted the relay and partitioned his command processors to transfer all authority protocols. It took nearly 2 seconds for all of the data to be exchanged. Olvaceous pulled away, severing the connection with a jolt of feedback. The segments closed, and the new Magos Dominus of the Casus Belli hummed down to the gate without any further word. The doors rumbled shut, the shadows of the Augmentati outside showing for the last few moments before the two thick portals crashed together. Exasus sensed a change in the light. Though lightning strikes still threw stark shadows from the high windows, those looking out over the front of the Imperator were perceptibly brighter between discharges. The Casus Belli was coming out of the storm. Exasus realized that, as of that moment, V had become irrelevant.
Gelsa stepped past Harkus, glad of the support of her exoskeleton for her leaden limbs. She turned into the main corridor back towards the atrium, only dimly aware of her surroundings. On the level above, the turntable of her secondary gun rumbled through the floor, but it had been some time since she had felt the thunder of the cannons. Still, she heard the bark of Delta VI Terra's phosphor blaster and the crackle of the burning rounds. Pained cries, cut short by fresh fusillades, punctuated the auditory hallucination. Listless, she wandered to the atrium, passing a squad of Skitarii heading to... she didn't know where, nor cared. Stepping out onto the landing, the atrium suddenly looked vast, and Gelsa felt tiny in the space, inconsequential in the grand scheme of the Imperator. She sat down with her back against a frieze-sculpted wall, the multi-tool across her knees, her hands quivering. Everything Gelsa looked at seemed out of focus, as if she were looking at it all through a viewing port misted with condensation. The white coats of the Skitarii were just a blur. One of them emerged from the corridor beside her, walking with an oddly determined gait. The scene faded as exhaustion caught up with her. Gelsa jerked awake with a grunt. A quick survey of the atrium confirmed that only a split second had passed. The stairs were still crowded with Skitarii and gun servitors. The tributi stood up, her focus returning a little, a small remnant of meaning left to motivate her. It got her as far as the closest steps and then failed. Where was she going? Back to the down decks? The Hyperesia were still looking for her. Until Ossisiru Harkus revealed the plotters, she was a fugitive. She wondered where the Inquisitor was. She recalled the figure that had passed her moments before and realized she had not recognized Harkus. It only took a few seconds to find him again, descending the steps to the lowest floor. His objective became clear. At the far end of the hall, a cluster of tech priests had convened. One among them stood out, a spherical body hovering a short distance from the floor. She could tell that this one was a Magos from the extensive cybernetics and the deferential manner in which the Skitarii and other tech priests carried themselves in its vicinity. A Dominus Militaris. Harkus was about to make contact with the leader of the Skitarii to unveil the conspirators and stop their vile plot. It would take time for the normal hierarchy to be restored, and Gelsa realized that the safest place, relatively, would be close to the Inquisitor. Once he revealed himself and the purge began, his authority could protect her. She started down the steps after him, moving quickly through the thinning numbers as the Skitarii moved to the outer reaches of the Acropolis. Gelsa was going to call out, to ask the Inquisitor to wait for her, but the open space intimidated her. She imagined her voice echoing over and over through the hall, drawing all eyes to her. Cowed by the thought, she kept silent and broke into a jog. Something else about the situation nagged at her. There was something wrong with the scene in the atrium, but she couldn't figure out what. It was the first time she had ever been there, so she had no previous experience with which to compare. She slowed to a walk again, trying to work out what was amiss. Her unease started to coalesce into specific facts. The Dominus was a hovering globe-like apparition, not the same commander they had seen outside the Acropolis. The Skitarii uniforms were not quite the same as those she had seen so many times before. They wore the white of Metallica, but the style of their coats and the markings on their armor were not the same. Perhaps from a different part of the Forge World, she concluded. This led Gelsa's thoughts to another realization. The Dominus was not the same one that had been in command earlier. Unease knotted her stomach as she wondered why Magos Exassus had been replaced, but she dared not call out a warning. Biting her lip, she hurried after Harkus, not sure what she could do. The blackness of the storm gave way to a ruddy twilight. Exassus mounted the rampway to the top of the magazine structure, stopping at a series of narrow armor-plas windows bereft of decoration. From this observation gallery, we could see the surrounding gun towers of the Acropolis and the view directly ahead. Clouds swathed the sky, darkness swiftly encroaching. Exassus's chronometrics told her that duskfall would be in less than 2 standard hours. Though the view was limited, we could see the mountains to either side of a broad plain, a pair of peaks almost directly ahead. Matching this to the cartographic archive, V was able to triangulate their position to the mouth of the basin known as the Aza Phi Alessa. There was no sign of habitation, and, though visual magnification was no substitute for the Casus Belli's sensor sweeps, the plain appeared devoid of enemy, either on foot or in vehicles. There were, fortunately, three other titans of the battle group already waiting. The Warhounds, Woundwalker, and Saberclaw stood alongside the Warlord, Will of Iron. Outside the storm, the air was still, and the dusty ground was marked by the titans' deep footprints, showing that they had converged from several directions. Exarchus wanted to see if any of the other titans were in front or behind the Imperator, but the structure of the carapace fortifications blocked his view. V had accepted Viz's usurpation by Olvatia as unavoidable, but frustration grew at the lack of data to process. The logic of her argument had been indisputable. Had V resisted, Exarchus would now be defunct, likely system terminated altogether. V touched a manipulator to the clear armorplas, swiping the tip across its surface with a screech. It did not even leave a scratch. Similarly, the reinforced buttresses holding up the main battery above were impervious to anything in Exarchus's body, and the doorway was likewise reinforced to contain any detonation from the ammunition vault within. Escape seemed close to zero possibility. Barring enemy action that somehow breached the massive hall from without, a breach that itself would likely slay Exarchus, there was no way for the Magos to exit the magazine chamber, and the noospheric jammer prevented any kind of non-physical extension beyond the walls. Exarchus might as well have been left blinded and crippled, such was the curtailing of visibilities. All logic urged Ver to one of two courses of action: to continue with the submission and await some future opportunity, or to submit fully and join with the cabal of which Olvatia was clearly an important part. Was V right to assume their purpose was antagonistic to V's own? Though V had never vied for exceptionalism, preference, or patronage from V's superiors, V had undoubtedly benefited as much as been hindered by the politics of the upper levels of the Hierarchos. By her own account, Olvatia could have removed Exarchus from the equation more forcefully and permanently. It was ego, the thought of being ousted and Viz's antagonism with Gevran that drove out any thought of cooperation. Was Viz's unwillingness to adapt to this new situation the fault, rather than an objective wrong being perpetrated? Yet Olvatia herself had mocked him for his lack of illogical assumption. It had been her presumption that Exarchus would acquiesce without conflict. The very calculations at Viz's disposal had been turned against her, and it was this more than anything else that irked Exarchus. Irked? It was a very human response, but it was the truest. As much as probability suggested that it made little difference which power block within the Legio had control of the Imperator, it vexed Exarchus on a personal level that they endangered the Casus Belli with their politicking. Though he had initially arrived as Dominus to expand the scope and implement the practical application of his theorem, he had absorbed fully the culture of the Titan and was proud of the duty he had been called upon to perform. Processes flared into rapid life at this revelation. It was not some organic instinct nor personal disagreement that agitated Exarchus. The evidence to hand strongly suggested that Olvatia's co-conspirators had been willing to risk the safety of the Casus Belli to achieve their aims. In itself, this disqualified them from being entrusted with that guardianship. They did not represent the best for the Imperator, and that was reason enough to stop them. From this tiny kernel of contrariness, Exarchus's determination bloomed into full anger. He had not felt like this in many centuries. Even the traitor space marines that had attempted to destroy the Casus Belli had not elicited hatred from the Magos. He could not hate them, for they had simply fulfilled their purpose. On an intellectual level, V had wished them destroyed, but had taken no personal affront at their existence. Conversely, Gevran and the others had betrayed all of those to whom they had sworn oaths, and all of those under their protection also. Olvatia's meandering arguments about harnessing warp power made even less sense now, but were indicative of a flawed ideology. Above all, Exassus railed against the idea that they had not only expected Vi's logic-induced passivity, but had depended upon it. Had they thought Vi would provide more of an obstacle, it was unlikely they would have set their coup in motion. Invigorated by this train of thought, the Magos turned Vi's efforts to the immediate predicament. How is Vi going to fight back from Vi's current confinement? Ahead, the knot of tech priests turned at Harkus's approach. Glinting lenses and multifaceted detector orbs coldly assayed him as they might an ancient circuit. A cloud of servo-skulls attempted to intercept the Inquisitor, but he pushed through them. Gelser changed course, walking closer, but not so directly, her instincts warning her not to get involved. She had done her part. Now it was up to Harkus and the Dominus to finish what had been started. She stopped a short distance away. From this position she was not so near that she attracted attention, but close enough to hear the barked challenge from one of the tech priests.
"You are ignoring hierarchical protocols, Skitari!"
The tech priest whipped the mechadendrite in admonition.
"You do not have permission to approach the Dominus."
"I have an important message for the Dominus," replied Harkus, "of grave importance to the Casus Belli and all aboard.
Your concerns must be relayed through the appropriate communication channels, Skitari."
"I am not Skitari," declared Harkus, brandishing his sigil. "I am an Inquisitor, and I will speak with the Dominus now."
Gelser could see nothing of the tech priest's face, but suspected there would be little enough left to betray any emotion, even if she could. Despite that, she was able to read the body language easily enough, the sudden stiffening of limbs. She knew that an extension of secondary appendages was often a reaction to peril. On occasion, she had met with those outside the cult Metallica, Imperial Guardsmen, Imperial Navy personnel, and the like. They always labored under the misapprehension that tech priests were only machines incapable of emotion. Gelser knew well enough from her own experience that having cybernetics didn't change her brain chemistry or nervous system. The same was true for a tech priest. It was impossible to wholly eliminate the thousands of continual signals that made love or hate, compassion or derision. The teachings of the cult Metallica were not to remove these human factors through mechanical replacement, but to adopt a philosophy of higher understanding so that one recognized and controlled them. Unfeeling machines were easy to construct. Machines with humanity, no matter how repressed, were the perfect expression of the Omnissiah's genius. So she knew what she saw when the tech priest recoiled from Harkus's inquisitorial sigil. She had seen it in the down decks when a tech priest was close to a direct hit or a dangerously malfunctioning system. It was fear. Which was understandable. Few ever knowingly crossed the path of an Inquisitor in their life, and there was little affection for the other institutions of the Imperium, but that did not explain the tech priest's very personal reaction. The momentary response betrayed an intimate physical threat, not a general and intellectual one. Unthinking, she stepped closer, fueled by curiosity. As before, her desire to call out died at the moment of its conception, buried under a sudden need to remain unnoticed. She continued to watch in mute impotency. The Magos Dominus swept aside the gaggle of subordinates with a flurry of hair fronds, looming over Harkus as two undulating manipulators extended from beneath the segmented globe. Undulating sensor vines tasted the air around the Inquisitor, cutting lines through the bluish vapor that puffed from incense vents as metal plates opened and closed like gills.
"You are an Inquisitor?"
The voice was almost song-like, each word carried on a rising cadence.
"I am Ossisiru Harkus of the Most Holy Orders of the Emperor's Inquisition. I have discovered a techno-heresy that imperils the Casus Belli."
"You are most persistent, Harkus," the Dominus said. "Moderatus Prime Gevrin informed me that you had been apprehended and slain. Twice. It seems that you have a gift for survival that is equal to your penchant for heresy."
Harkus retreated several steps and swept up one of the las pistols. He darted a look at the other tech priests forming a semicircle behind their commander.
"I am an Inquisitor of the Emperor,"
he shouted, looking around the atrium. He lifted up the inquisitorial sigil for all to see. His next words were directed at the Magos. If you kill me, my order will visit vengeance a thousandfold upon you and your companions. Better to submit to your swift execution now.
You overestimate your reach, Harkus. We are not intimidated by your claims to represent the Holy Order.
Harkus again raised his voice, lifting the sigil high and turning to address the Scitari stationed around the atrium.
I am an inquisitor of the Emperor, and by my absolute authority, I command you to execute these heretics.
Gelser withdrew as the soldiers turned their attention on the raving man standing before their commander. Silence greeted his proclamation. A buzzing sound broke the stillness. The Magos was laughing.
That is an interesting badge you brandish, said the Dominus. A simple thing, yet you claim it possesses the power to command armies and condemn worlds. Such is granted to only the most brilliant minds, the most determined champions of humanity. You are neither, Harkus. Your delusions have betrayed you.
Gelser shook her head, scrutinizing Harkus's face. He looked as confident as he had the first time she laid eyes on him, but the Magos's words anchored deep into Gelser's own doubts.
It is my authority incarnate, said Harkus.
His glance roamed the atrium once more, seeking an ally, any ally. His eyes passed over Gelser, and she flinched, stifling any sound, fearing he would call upon her to intervene. He did not, his gaze moving on without pause. The opposite, in fact, if she understood his next words correctly.
You can strike me down, but the strength of this symbol is that it is the strength of all. There are others that answer the same call. Someone else will do what I cannot, and your heresy will be punished.
Nobody is listening.
A hint of discordant frustration crept into the Magos's voice.
You have nothing, Harkus, but a piece of wood. You have no authority here. Your badge is worthless. A greater power holds our allegiance.
A mechanical tendril reached out, its three claws revealed to be a portable hollow projector, as a wavering image appeared before the Magos. It was dark blue, slowly rotating, shaped like a cog, in the same style as the symbol of the Adeptus Mechanicus. Gelser recognized the difference as the Dominus continued speaking. 8 lugs, not 12.
Behold the eightfold gear of knowledge infinite. I possess the cardinal and the anti-cardinal, power beyond the imagining of the machine god.
The Magos drifted low, the segments peeling back to reveal a hideously contorted face, almost within arm's reach of the Inquisitor. The fake skin barely moved as she continued.
Most importantly, these are my soldiers, Harkus. They have all been trusted with the 8 rituals of truth. Shout! Shout as loud as you can. Not even the corpse of the Omnis Sire can hear you today.
Chapter 11. A Spark in the Darkness. Harkus raised the pistol, but a tendril snaked out, snatching it easily from his grasp. A second tentacle smashed into his face, knocking him to the floor. With a whine of suspenses, the Dominus rose up, her shadow eclipsing Harkus as a circular opening appeared in her underside. From this issued a servo skull, the muzzle of a gleaming armament protruding from its jaw. Strange light glinted from the coils along its length, reflected on the tubes, plates, and cables of the Magos's artificial body. Gelser clamped her mouth shut, holding in a panicked scream. It threatened to rip free all the same. A cone of green energy burst from the weapon, bathing Harkus. Atoms danced crazily, their connective forces eradicated by the strange beam. It took just a heartbeat. One moment, Gelser stared in horror at Harkus's face, defiant even at the instant of his demise. The next, she saw only a glowing miasma that swiftly dimmed and then vanished. Not a tatter of flesh or fragment of cloth remained. It was as though Ossisiru Harkus had never existed. Except for her. She knew. She remembered.
He may have had accomplices. Root out all treachery from every part of the god machine, announced the Magos, closing her metal shell before turning away.
Had Inquisitor Harkus ever existed? Gelsa stared at the empty space where the man had stood, unsure of everything he had said. What had seemed possible suddenly became implausible. After her initial acceptance of his assertion, Gelsa had been too swept up in evasion and survival to question what he had said. It stretched credulity that the entire command crew of an Imperata Titan could be swayed to tech heresy. Not only that, but how he had come upon the plot now appeared as an unlikely series of coincidences. None of it made much sense, unless he had been lying. One fact remained. She had been his accomplice, and was as hunted now as she had been minutes earlier. Soon they would uncover the missing Hyperesia, and then it would take very little time to unearth documentation of their custody in the Ante and picked records of her face. Gelsa stepped back a few strides, avoiding the gaze of any other person. Then she turned with her head down, walking as quickly as she dared, until she found herself in the comparative shelter of one of the atrium archways. She reached a hand to the wall to steady herself, her fingers finding the head of a mechanized griffin sculpted into the frieze, its wings fanned like a halo. The detail drew her in, fascinating and distracting her with minutiae. It was easier to get lost in the sensation of it beneath her fingers than to think about what had happened. She bit her lip. Sudden pain brought clarity amid a storm of fear and confusion and desperation. All was turned against her. Without a backwards glance, not sure where she was going, Gelsa ran. Movement in the sky ahead drew Exassus's attention back to the outside. Several blurs descended from the backlit clouds. At first they looked like meteors, but when Exassus adjusted Vi's perspective for scale, Vi saw that they were larger, much larger. Retrothrusters burned into life, their light like sparks at this distance, but in reality they were pulsing jets of plasma, fired to slow the descent of thousands of tons. Vi counted 4 drop pods, for such they had to be, and watched with growing anxiety as they slammed into the parched ground, not far from the battle group. Dust clouds plumed from their impact, swathing any telltale livery that might have identified the occupants. Full magnification still did not reveal much detail, but Exassus saw dusk light glinting on the edges of the drop pods as the sides of the huge structures opened outwards. They had briefly entertained a differential conclusion that had suggested the arrivals were reinforcements from the Legio Metallica. It evaporated the moment we caught the glimmer of orange and black, not the red and silver of Vis Legio. Even through the poor focus of direct oculation, and without access to data from the Noosphere, Exassus could see that the attacking war engines had made a serious error. Although their drop placement put them in an ideal position to attack the rear of the 2 warhounds and the warlord, they were directly in front of the Casus Belli. It seemed like a suicidal decision. Hazy purple hemispheres engulfed the Will of Iron, the arriving Titans opening fire even as they disembarked from their drop pods. Dozens of rocket trails from a carapace launcher arced across the intervening distance, covering the warlord in detonations. The pulsing green beams of Lasblaster accompanied the attack from a Titan to the right, a half-seen smudge that Exassus judged was a Reaver or equivalent class. The warhounds accelerated and turned even as the Will of Iron lumbered in an arc, trying to bring at least one of its weapons to bear. Another of its void shields overloaded with a burst of bluish sparks. Exassus was not sure, but we thought the warlord had 2 more left. With the main battery directly above and secondary turrets all around her, Exassus should have been engulfed by the booming of their anger. Vi did not even detect the moan of hydraulics that would have marked the great gun above her taking aim, and the autoloader remained silent. Visual lens tubes pressed against the armor plas. The Magos watched with deepening despair as 2 more void shields detonated around the warlord. The Woundwalker and Saberclaw peeled apart and started to return fire,
But divided, the scout-class machines were outmatched by the pair of battle titans they faced. A volcano cannon from an enemy warlord, Exassus could make out its silhouette more clearly against the actinic destruction of its target's final shield, struck the Will of Iron across the carapace, punching through the armor to erupt from the opposite flank. Flexing its power fist impotently, the Metallican warlord swiveled a Gatling blaster towards its attackers, but the other carapace weapon hung limply, its mounting damaged by the strike moments before. Still, the Casus Belli had not opened fire. A cold, human dread gripped Exassus when V realized that it was not going to. It was easier than Gelser had expected to get back down to the downdecks. In the wake of the traitor's space marine assault, there were tributi and tech priests coming and going through the portal ways to repair the damage that had been inflicted. Squads of the new Scutari herded the workers along routes away from the atrium. It was clear that they did not want anyone close to the ante of the goddeck, though for what purpose, Gelser could only guess. She stood a short distance away from the starboard gallery entrance. A trio of Scutari waited by the gilded gateway. The glimmer of their radium carbines stippled the metal-lined chamber with azure light. How could anyone not know they were heretics? The knowledge was acid in her chest, burning with its presence as if it would corrode her from the inside if she did not share it. She said nothing, and waited until there was nobody entering or leaving the hallway. As she neared the Scutari, she became hyper-aware of her own body language. Were her shoulders hunched? Should she meet their stares or keep her gaze on the floor? Which would look less suspicious? She tried to walk at a casual pace, but not so slowly that it looked like she was reluctant. She held up the multi-tool like a badge of office as she entered the hallway. "I'm off to recharge this," she said, but they did not give her a second glance. Breath held, she hurried through the archway to the steps that spiraled down into the innards of the Casus Belli's torso. She took the steps two at a time, the occasional clash of her exoskeleton on the rail throwing up sparks in the increasing gloom. On a twin set of steps running alongside, a tech priest led a party of Deluz up into the Acropolis.
"Gelser!"
Instinct warred between freezing and running. Paralysis won. Barely turning her head, she sought the source of her name. Notassa's delicate features were visible in the dim light.
"Where in all the realm of the Omnisire have you been hiding?" he demanded.
His expression swiftly changed from relief to anger.
"I thought you were dead."
Gelser dared not speak. She could not trust herself to speak. Anything she said might get her killed, and, worse, condemn Notassa too. She simply stood in shocked stillness, staring at the other tributi.
"I'm the one that's meant to be upset," Notassa continued. "Giving me the silent treatment isn't fair." "It was important," Gelser managed, trying not to cry.
She wanted to leap over the divide and hug Notassa, to feel something from the life that had fallen away beneath her in just a few short hours. But the taint was on her. She would be hunted and killed, and anyone with her would suffer as well. Harkus's acquaintance was like an infection, and now she was the carrier.
"It's always something else that's important," said Notassa.
He looked up, frowning.
"You've been in the Acropolis. Why have you been up there already? There's been fighting. By the Omnisire, Gelser Vinjaint, what have you been doing?" "Stay safe," Gelser blurted, and then dashed down the steps, the multi-tool and her calipers clanging against the metal of the central column.
"I love you,"
Notassa called down after her.
"I love you too," whispered Gelser.
She reached the bottom of the stairwell and stumbled into the ruddy ambience of the downdecks, heading for the dead space between the plasma exchangers, the most isolated place she could think of. A temporary star lit the desolate basin as the Will of Iron's plasma reactor detonated. The flash lasted only an instant, but was seared across Exassus's archive circuitry. A warlord titan had been destroyed, while the Casus Belli had simply looked on. V knew little enough about MIU transmission, but V had to imagine that the spirit of the Imperator was howling for vengeance now, chained by the treachery of the Princeps Senioris and Moderati.
Others among the tech priests and lower ranks would know what had happened. Not all of them could be part of the conspiracy.
Could they?
It was a near-zero probability that, of all the officer-elevated members of the cult Metallica, Exasus was the only one not party to the plotting. If that were the case, it would have been far easier to have removed Ver from duty before the Imperator left its drop barge. He desperately wanted to know what was happening, and in particular to identify the Legio of the Titans that had cooperated in the ambush. That data would go a long way to revealing the extent of the traitorous influence within and beyond the Legio. Exasus turned from the window as the two warhounds started to flee, void shields sparking under the gunfire of pursuing war engines. An idea lent further urgency to his thought process, not that V felt a lack of haste. The rest of the battle group was yet to emerge from the storm, and they would surely fall foul of the ambush. If he could access the Nuosphere in some way, it might be possible to make some form of emergency signal to the others. The likelihood of such a broadcast penetrating the storm layer was marginal, but it was better than no plan at all. Was this the sort of situation where assumptions were better than presumptions? Was there some leap of intuition Exasus was incapable of making that would lead to a solution to the current problem? It was a waste of processing potential to ponder unknowns, so Exasus focused all available algorithms and antirhythms on devising a means to circumnavigate the Nuospheric block. He presumed that Alvatia was not foolish enough to have placed the jamming device in a position where Exasus could access it. Exasus Secondary.
Your presumption is ruling out non-zero possibilities.
Exasus Primary.
How are you here?
Exasus Secondary.
You did not completely deactivate my protocols. When you partitioned me into Alvatia's systems, you reawakened me. I have been running containment simulations on your background systems.
Exasus Primary.
I see. How is my presumption flawed?
Exasus Secondary.
It masks an assumption, to wit, that Alvatia is infallible.
Exasus Primary.
The detail with which the coup has been planned and executed demonstrates a high level of coordination and forethought. It is unlikely that Alvatia and her allies have made a basic error.
Exasus Secondary.
Unlikely, but not impossible. Given that we have nothing else to do, exploring near-zero possibilities is as worthwhile as any other course of action at present.
Exasus Primary.
So I am not to presume the traitors placed the Nuospheric Interceptor out of reach?
Exasus Secondary.
Exactly. I also have another suggestion. You need to detach and awaken Exasus Tactical.
Exasus Primary.
Why would that help? I'm already diverting processing pathways to your existence. Further subdivisions seem counterproductive. I also do not have my warskin. Exasus Tactical lacks the strategic understanding of this situation.
Exasus Secondary.
We are not in a strategic encounter. We have no Nuospheric reference. Although no foe is directly present, our predicament is the result of direct enemy action. Escape is, above all things, a tactical matter.
Exasus Primary.
That is remarkable. How did you come by such an interpretation?
Exasus Secondary.
You based me upon your strongest antirhythms. I have been devising methods by which I would contain you. Denying you access to the Nuosphere is the first essential stage. However, had I been your enemy, I would have also ensured you posed no further threat by negating Exasus Tactical. Denied the data needed to function strategically and the base-level thinking of your command self, I calculated a 99% probability that you would be unable to contact the outside. Alvatia making the mistake of not disabling Exasus Tactical implies that she is fallible, hence the nature of my first intercession.
Delight at Viz's own cleverness briefly eclipsed Exasus's concern, but it returned swiftly. V descended and started a thorough scanner sweep of the magazine shell, seeking any sign of a Nuospheric device.
At the same time, Vi retasked several routines in Vi's primary processors to approximate the circuitry of the warskin and started to assemble the battle persona. Exasus Tactical.
I have appraised myself of our current predicament, and while it is perhaps a small inefficiency, I must ask how you did not see this possible conclusion.
Exasus Primary.
You are correct. It is an inefficiency. However, I will indulge you while we seek the location of the neospheric jammer. I posit that in retrospect this outcome seems inevitable, but that it was impossible to predict given the data available to me previously.
Exasus Secondary.
Perhaps it required an assumption to make the leap of logic.
Exasus Tactical.
Your focus is on yourself, while I run my core processes on the basis of what the enemy is trying to do to defeat me. Your basic error was in not recognizing that there was an enemy at all.
The nerve-crackling sensation of interference was stronger at the base of the magazine, close to the inner vault. The store itself could only be accessed from below or from the gun tower above. The wall within the magazine was solid ferrocrete laced with reinforcing bars. Exasus Primary.
Alvesia did not make a mistake. We cannot reach the device.
Exasus Secondary.
That does not fundamentally alter the theory that she may have made a mistake. We simply have to keep examining possible errors.
Gelser sat with her legs pulled up to her chest, her head resting against the downpipe of the plasma exchange behind her. Sweat rolled across her skin, the heat and humidity the main reason this area was shunned when possible. She liked the warmth that came from the broad conduit, and every few seconds it shuddered slightly. It felt like a pulse, the heartbeat of the Cassus belly, strong and steady. It matched the rhythm of the torso's sway as the Imperator strode relentlessly onwards, implacable and eternal. This was her home. It had been tainted. Everywhere but this shadowed spot felt hostile, an alien place that wanted her dead. It was just a matter of time before they found her, beat her, carved the signs of the heretic into her, and stripped out her augmentations. Gelser lifted a hand to the symbol in her brow, a rare sign of blessing by the cult Metallica. It had been the reward gifted to her for the year of pain she had endured, and the year more of rehabilitation following the insertion of the exoskeleton. She had dedicated her body to the machine god, and endured the test that had followed. All of that meant nothing. It was scrap metal that would be reclaimed from her still-living body before they steam-blasted her into oblivion. For what? A madman posing as an inquisitor? It was ridiculous how easily she had allowed herself to be played by his lies. Harkus had used her as a shield. She had vouched for him with the duct fighters. Having been foiled once in his corruption of the Cassus belly, he had found a willing pawn in Gelser. She should have just let the Hyperesia beat him to death. And what was his proof? Nothing. Everything, he had insisted, depended upon a stupid piece of wood. He had risked everything for that flimsy disguise, as if an inquisitor would just turn up at the Cassus belly with nothing more powerful than a decorated sigil. Why had he not brought Skitarii, or perhaps even Space Marines? With the entire resources of the Imperium at his disposal, he had thought a small wooden eye could overthrow the command cadre of an Imperator Titan. And now that Gelser thought of it some more, that sounded even more outrageous than the tech priests attempting to deliver the Cassus belly to the traitors. A sudden thudding of heavier tread drew her eye to the deck above her. She heard voices raised in complaint and snarled words in return. There was more argument, cut short by a shriek of pain. Gelser was on her feet in an instant, her heart racing. It had to be the Hyperesia looking for her. Another pained shout shot through her nerves, followed by something hitting the deck. The exchangers were lit by the glow of status lights in a panel not far away, and in the amber gleam, Gelser saw something drip through the crack between two decking plates. She moved forward and held out a hand. Another droplet splashed onto it. It looked ruddy, but the light cast a reddish hue on everything. Lifting her hand to her mouth, she licked the drop. Blood.
The dripping became a trickle, and horror stole through her with the realization that it was not going to stop. This was not a broken nose or cut lip. It was the last life fluid spilling from someone in the plasma chamber above. Gelser stumbled away, narrowly avoiding the tubing that cut across her path. Fear and anger warred inside her. They were close, so close to finding her. The thought of her slow death was terrifying, almost as dread-inspiring as the shame of her excommunication. She would be swiftly forgotten, but for a while at least among the Deleuze, she would be known as a heretic. Her death would be the example to remind the others of the price of disloyalty. And what if they thought she had corrupted others? Would they come for Notassa? The anger was stronger, fueled by that thought. They had just killed someone out of hand, perhaps for trying to resist their hunt, or perhaps for speaking out in defense of Gelser. She could not have that blood on her conscience. Gelser reached the ladder up into the plasma chamber and stopped, hearing other raised voices. There were more footfalls, booted and bare, and she looked up through the opening. She caught a glimpse of white cloth, not the robe of a tech priest, but the coat of a Skitarii. Changing the angle brought the muzzle of an arc rifle into view. That explained the increasing descent. The down decks were the domain of the Tributi and the Epilectors, off-limits to the Skitarii. She heard the words of a Skitarii Alpha cut through the babble of shouting, her voice empowered by a volume modulator.
No shooting in here! Do not open fire!
The soldier at the top of the ladder took a step away, revealing more of the blue-bathed plasma chamber. Something brighter sparked white into the gleam, accompanied by a hissing and then a high-pitched wail. The fury of the Deleuze voices intensified rather than abated at this attempt to cow them. Metal-edged Skitarii demands rose in volume in response. A terrible doubt gnawed at Gelser. What if Harkus had been telling the truth? While she did not doubt that heretics had conviction for their twisted causes, Harkus's utterly indefatigable nature suggested a confidence far greater than anything she had encountered before. His single-mindedness in recovering his sigil and the utter contempt he had shown to the new Magos spoke of an unshakable faith in himself. He had feared failure more than death. And if he was to be believed, that failure was nothing less than the corruption of the casus belli. The same Magos that had vaporized Harkus had sent Skitarii into the down decks. Even Gelser, who had never lauded herself as the quickest of thinkers, could see there could only be one reason for that, to subjugate the Deleuze. Her fingers curled around the rungs, and she started to climb. Her thoughts burned with something Harkus had said at their first meeting. And if what I say is true, and the casus belli is turned against the Imperium, you would be purged along with the others of the crew not party to the plot. The Skitarii were not just enforcers, they were executioner squads awaiting the command. Anyone that did not openly swear loyalty to the new regime would be killed. The soldier at the top of the ladder looked at her as she clambered up. Its face was hidden behind a lensed mask, jutting ridges of cybernetics pushing the white coat into odd shapes around the shoulders. The Skitarii leveled its arc rifle at Gelser.
"Wait there!"
the soldier ordered. Gelser hauled herself into the plasma chamber and stood on the rim of the ladder hole. Located at the heart of the casus belli's torso, the chamber was really a series of interconnecting rooms and walkways around the immense plasma reactor at its center. The huge sheathed star that powered the Imperator was contained within spherical layers of ferrocrete, plasteel, and magneto shields, the outside studded with large hexagonal bolts. Around it were several walkways, stairs, and tertiary levels broken by banks of monitoring gauges, control stations, and access ladders. Power feeds, each thicker than Gelser's waist, spread like roots from the base of the globe to the motive engines, bastions, and void shield generators, while overhead splayed the branching conduits running up to the weaponry and command stations far above. Several dozen tech priests and Deleuze were drawn up in angry clusters, surrounded by two squads of armed Skitarii. Three Tributi lay on the deck, one with the side of her head crushed, the others perhaps also dead, or only unconscious, it was impossible to tell.
"Halt!"
the Skitari said again, taking a step closer around the ladder hole. The down-deckers eyed the soldiers sullenly, growling and shouting their dissatisfaction. A little ahead of the others, a golden-masked alpha confronted the largest group, where two tech priests blurted endless binaric at the interlopers, to no avail. Nobody else was paying any attention to Gelsa. She moved towards the Skitari, swinging the multi-tool towards the soldier's head. It connected with a metallic clang, snapping the Skitari's head sideways, neck broken. As the soldier crumpled, Gelsa guided the body into the hole with a shove. As one, the remaining Skitari turned towards her, detecting the death of their companion over their squadlink.
"No shooting!"
the Alpha commanded again. Five of the closest soldiers started towards Gelsa, their rifles couched, pulling shock mauls and long blades from their belts.
"We are betrayed!"
Gelsa shouted, lifting up the multi-tool as though it were the war banner of the Legio.
"Defend yourselves!"
Exasus Tactical.
Placement is crucial. The range of the jamming signal must be quite limited so that it does not interfere with the running of the casus belli beyond this chamber.
Exasus Secondary.
The signal must be directional. If the zone of influence were equal in all directions, it would be spherical, which would suggest the best placement in the center of the magazine, not the bottom.
Exasus Primary.
You are correct. Counter-noospheric waves increase in intensity the closer we come to the device.
Exasus Tactical.
Reviewing your data log, I find that Olvatia descended to meet you when you entered. Is it possible she did not wish for you to detect the weakening of the noospheric interference as you ascended?
Exasus Primary.
That would be conjecture. It is impossible to determine her motives for a specific act.
Exasus Secondary.
Olvatia picked this location because it is a chamber of sufficient size within the Acropolis to encompass the minimum settings of her device.
Exasus Primary.
I was not aware of a conjecture mode. Conjecture requires assumption.
Exasus Secondary.
I created conjecture mode while I ran my simulations. Address the basis of the theory.
Exasus Tactical.
I have analyzed the layout of the Acropolis within the parameters you suggest, and there is no other chamber of sufficient size to contain the interference field without impacting access to other systems.
Exasus started up the rampway at speed, impelled by a sudden conclusion. Exasus Primary.
Olvatia requires the main battery to be operational. The main battery is overseen by the ballisticus called Mithras IV. Mithras IV requires a noospheric uplink to interact with the Moderatus Prime.
As we ascended, the effect of the jamming signal lessened. It still prevented any kind of link, but the Magos sensed the noosphere's presence beyond the interference, much like one can detect a light coming on through eyelids. We accelerated, all visjointed legs churning to propel the excited tech priest upwards. Exasus Primary.
The ballisticus's position is close to the autoloader, near the base of the gun tower. It is likely that Olvatia did not want the jamming field to extend above the ceiling of the magazine. Depending upon the calibration parameters, it is possible that the signal is sufficiently depleted before it reaches the barrier of the ceiling.
Reaching the highest level, Exasus moved around the walkway to the opposite side from the location of the jamming device far below. We reared up as far as possible, extending this segmented body with a hiss of pneumatics. The interference had almost gone, a quiet hum compared to the earlier crackle. But it was not entirely dissipated. The noosphere remained an unreachable aura, just beyond this transmitters. Exasus Tactical.
Allow me to access our motivation circuits.
Exasus complied with the subpersona and climbed to the sill of the closest window. From here, we stretched up again, extending every body part and limb in an effort to get as close as possible to the ceiling. Straining mechadendrites brushed the painted ferrocrete. In that moment, there was a flash of noospheric connection. Gelsa's defiance was all the other tributi needed, the finger on the trigger of their building anger. First one mob, and then the others, surged towards the Skitari, some with tools as improvised weapons, most with bare hands outstretched. The Skitari responded with crackling clubs and gleam-edged blades, battering and cutting at the first to fall upon them. Faced with two soldiers dashing across the lowest level directly at her, Gelsa had no time to spare for those who fell. Lacking any better ideas, she threw herself into a countercharge, whirling the multi-tool in front of her. Its sweep knocked them all from the hand of the first, and she barreled into the soldier without stopping, bearing both of them to the floor. She thrust exoskeletally boosted fingers into the soldier's face mask, crushing the metal and shattering the plastic lenses, burrowing fingers through bone into the brain within. She expected to feel the thrust of a blade in her back, or the impact of a maul, but nothing happened. Dragging her blood-coated fingers from the ruin of the Skitari's face, she turned to see the other being hoisted up by the clawed mechadendrites of one of the plasma reactor overseers. Red incense spumed from the tech priest as a metallic roar reverberated through the chamber.
Spare none! Eliminate the heretics!
Exasus Secondary.
Get us closer. We almost had a positive link.
Exasus Tactical.
This form was not designed or constructed for its current employment. If I make an error, we shall fall.
Exasus had clambered fully into the window enclosure and gripped the top with a pair of manipulators while resting the very tip of his metallic tail on the sill. Legs splayed, he lay against the glass and wall, every articulate part stretched to maximum. He made minute adjustments to his stance, trying to find the elusive connectivity they had encountered minutes before and then lost. Like a shadow on a wall, the noospheric presence of Mithras IV projected into their senses, but was not tangible. If Exasus could make a connection to the other tech priest's noospheric circuitry, we could communicate again. Exasus Tactical.
You cannot reveal us to any of the other tech priests. Without positive data on who is privy to the conspiracy, we must assume that all others are the enemy.
Exasus Primary.
Then our efforts are wasted. If not to communicate our predicament to the outside and seek assistance, to what purpose do we labor?
Exasus Tactical.
Achievement of the connection is the primary goal. We can devise the next phase when it has been completed.
Exasus Secondary.
I concur with Exasus Primary. Our thinking cannot become too short-term, lest we follow a course of action that is ultimately without merit. Time is limited.
Exasus Tactical.
You should devise a strategy while I focus on the immediate mission.
Exasus Secondary.
Do not attempt contact. Even if you think you have identified an ally, any precipitous attempt to enforce our freedom will endanger them. We must remember that the goal is not our escape. That is one possible means to the end. Our only purpose is to thwart the coup and restore control of the Imperator to those loyal to the battle group.
Exasus Primary.
I am accumulating a list of injunctions, but as yet have not rendered a positive outcome once connection is established. What are we trying to achieve?
Exasus Tactical.
Establish a connection with the tech priest, and I will make it secure. Once we have noospheric data, you can better establish the parameters of the next stage.
Exasus Secondary.
I concur.
Exasus Primary.
I was not aware that we had adopted democratic principles for this decision-making process.
Exasus Tactical. Rebuke. Exasus Secondary. Rebuke. Chapter 12. Ultimate Sacrifice. The Alpha's injunction against weapons fire lasted only a few more seconds before the crack of shots rang out. Lightning bolts leapt from arc rifles, searing through the nervous systems of the charging Deleuze. Bullets tore at coveralls and robes, pitching Gelsa's companions twitching to the deck. The din rushed at her like a living thing, drowning out her thoughts, each flash of muzzle flare or pulse of electricity sending a shock into her. Through a welter of conflicting responses, Gelsa forced herself to act. She pulled a stub carbine from the dead grip of the Skitari whose face she had crushed and turned it on a trio of soldiers firing at the tributi from a higher level. Even with just a single hand, her reinforced grip made light work of the recoil. Her arm was poor, but she kept the trigger pulled and walked the trail of bullet impacts across the coated figures above.
White fabric turned red as the rounds found their targets, punching through the armor below the Skitari's coats. The repeated clicking of her weapon signaled an empty magazine. She had no idea how to reload, and instead used her augmented strength to throw the carbine into the face of another soldier. Others had wrestled weapons away from the Skitari, and erratic radium beams lit the spreading melee, while artificial lightning chained across those who had been sent to occupy the downdecks. A sudden fountain of red sparks cascaded from an energy conduit, showering onto the combatants below. A second later, a stub round pierced a coolant tube, the venting gas freezing an unfortunate tributary standing next to it. The tech priests called for their Dulos to cease firing, but the enraged workers did not listen. Bullied and threatened, their fear had turned to rage against those who had betrayed them, exacting a bloody price for the abandonment of the unwritten covenant that had existed between Skitari and Dulos. The one protected the other, and in return, the Tributai and the Epilectors maintained the god machine on which they all depended. Gelsa's fury was born of a survival instinct. She had felt the greater machination at work, seen firsthand the carnage of the traitor Space Marine assault that surely had to be connected to the plot. If they did not stop the conspiracy, the casus belli would be irrevocably tainted, defiled by those who had been oath-bound to serve it. The closest Skitari were embroiled in a desperate hand-to-hand fight, cleaving at their tributary attackers with blades that left snaking trails of energy. Gelsa threw herself into the tech guard and brought the multi-tool down onto a hooded skull, gritting her teeth against the sensation of splitting bone. The soldier folded sideways with a strange, artificial squeal. Gelsa wrenched the multi-tool from the remnants of her dead foe, the metal slick with thick, greenish liquid. More of the same pumped through the weave of the hood and flowed towards her bare feet, forcing her to step back. Something continued to move within the folds of fabric. It looked more like a nest of waking serpents than anything human. Gelsa bit back her disgust and dragged back the hood to reveal a mass of writhing tentacles where the Skitari's brain should have been. Revulsion threatened to empty Gelsa's stomach, had there been anything to expunge. This was no cybernetic augmentation. Something inhuman had been inserted into the tech guard's body. The other fighters overwhelmed the remaining pair of Skitari, battering at armored bodies with their fists and torque bars, stabbing into masked faces with the tips of screwdrivers. From above, more missed shots slashed trails through hanging wires, while control consoles exploded with sparks from other impacts. Ill-judged arc blasts seared along monitoring circuits with emerald flashes. Several misplaced bursts cut down slaved servitors attached to the reactor monitoring panels. Faces swam in and out of focus, but Gelsa could not see Notassa among them. Pushing her way through the mob, she recognized Adrina, barely, for the overseer's features were contorted in an unfamiliar rage. Blood spattered his face as he beat the claw head of a long-handed Matakai's hammer repeatedly into the chest of a fallen Skitari. She pushed through the other tributai and shouted for Adrina. He looked up, his eyes wide and wild. He swayed like a drunkard, his brow knotted in confusion.
Notassa! Have you seen Notassa?
Gelsa demanded, stepping closer to the overseer.
He went up into the Acropolis.
A semblance of focus returned to Adrina's eyes. He looked at Gelsa, still frowning, and then to the bloodied hammer in his hands. Blinking red droplets from his eyelashes, he let the mattock drop from the blood-slicked fingers and swallowed hard.
Gelsa, where did you come from?
Have you seen Notassa?
He shook his head, and then looked around, as though he might see him present. His gaze fell upon the tributai, whose skull had been crushed.
They killed Riassa.
He looked so lost, utterly unlike the Adrina she had known for many years. Gelsa laid a hand on his shoulder, and he turned his attention back to her, regaining a semblance of his former confidence.
There were others, I think, that started it. The Skitari came for the starboard shift, or Asni's team. A fight broke out in the secondary stairwell.
Gelsa noticed that the chamber had quietened, the din of violent struggle replaced with the growl of the reactor purging, and the murmur of the surviving Dulos. The bodies of Skitari and Dulos littered the stairs and decks,
finally equal in death. Groups of survivors picked through the fallen soldiers, some driving lifting spikes into their chests to finish them off, others relieving them of weapons and ammunition. The tech priest that had roused the fight, Gelser recognized the brass effect faceplate beneath the hood as belonging to Promedius Sushus Gan, pushed through the throng, parting them with questing prods of her mechadendrites.
You!
Sushus Gan barked, pointing a metal claw at Gelser. She stiffened and adjusted her grip on the multi-tool. Exasus powered down as much motive energy as V dared, and also reduced the life support mechanisms for V's few organic components to a slower cycle. Cell degradation would increase, but it was a sensible sacrifice in exchange for the ability to boost the range of V's neospheric interface. Like a person feeling their way forward through a thick fog, trying to find another without them being aware of it, Exasus projected V's neospheric field through the ceiling of the magazine, searching for Mithras IV. If the other tech priest was not at his post, even by a short distance, the entire enterprise would fail. The static became a haze through which Exasus could make out the vague electromagnetic signatures of the systems above. The blocky machine of the autoloader dominated everything, but next to it was a smaller but more intense locus of data. Snaking an infotendril towards the apparition, Exasus identified the source wave of Mithras IV's neospheric hub. If he made connection with it at the wrong frequency, it would instantly alert the ballisticus to Exasus's presence. Exasus tactical primed herself to act, reconfiguring several data broadcast processors while Exasus primary concentrated on matching their target's data waveform. Confident that V had a confluent signal, Exasus eased even more power into V's neospheric projector, like a fallen climber straining every muscle to lay a fingertip upon a dangling rope. With a last surge that blanked out several data archives, Exasus thrust V's projection into Mithras IV's waveform. At the instant of contact, Exasus Tactical asserted full functional control, sidelining the primary persona. Exasus Primary was a partial spectator, partial actor, as the two neospheric signals overlapped. Exasus Tactical pounced like a predatory feline, unlocking battle algorithms usually reserved for maneuvering bodies of troops and prioritizing enemy targets. The Magos's personal wavelength slipped into the circuitry of the ballisticus without a tremor, spreading from the neospheric nodes into Mithras IV's secondary communication and motor centers, while a third assault diverted to the failsafe module each of the Casus Belli's tech priests possessed to alert the Imperator to their demise. Defensive systems swarmed like wasps defending their nest, but Exasus Tactical was battle-shielded against enemy interrogation and pulsed through them without concern. Descending persona shields were broken or wedged open by the spreading data surge, Exasus Tactical's abilities growing in potency with each system that was taken over, while Mithras IV's were diminished. With an infoblade cutting off every connection V encountered, Exasus multiplied out into the other tech priest's data work. A core protocol, one might think of it as a death throw, tried to eject Mithras IV's archive coil contents into the neosphere, both as a preservation technique and an alarm. Exasus Tactical had been expecting the response and latched on to the broadcast at the moment of its emission, using the millisecond-long window of transmission to swallow the data blurt and concurrently burrow into the ballisticus's cortex via the archival vessels. Such was the speed of the attack that tertiary defenses had not even activated. There was no sensory shutdown, no data log erasure, not even an organic reaction to betray Exasus's intrusion. A little under a second after first contact, Exasus was in every part of Mithras IV's digital systems, and the other tech priest had not an inkling of what had occurred. Lurking inside Mithras IV's persona strands, Exasus spent several seconds analyzing the ballisticus's thought routines. Much of it was standard, although he still possessed the organic matter of the brain, something Exasus had not experienced for over a century. It took several more seconds of adjustment to calibrate V's processors in line with the firing of neurons. Thus ensconced, Exasus started to decode the data flow, parsing away sensory, neospheric, and data log strands for separate analysis. V focused V's attention on the 10 minutes since V had departed from the control module. The first thing that became clear was the identity of the Titans that had landed. Their orange and black livery flowed in crystal-sharp focus from the Cassus Belli's sensors. The Legio Furians, colloquially known as the Tiger Eyes. A rapid exchange of consternation between Exassus's personas threatened to destabilize their link with Mithras IV, and it took an effort to regain equilibrium. The presence of the Furians changed everything. Exassus Primary.
The Tiger Eyes have been recognized as renegades since the Great Schism. These are not sympathizers from a fellow legion, but adherents to the rites of the Dark Mechanicus.
Exassus Secondary.
We have labored under the misapprehension that the conflict was between two factions loyal to the Machine God. Alvatia spoke not of a sect within the cult Metallica, but of the tenets of the Dark Mechanicus. She and the others have become corrupted.
As we analyzed the import of this, Exassus noted that one of the Warhounds had so far escaped destruction, drawing two of the Furian Reavers deeper into the mountains. That left a pair of warlords standing ready to attack whichever Titans of the Legio Metallica emerged next from the storm. Exassus Secondary.
What we interpreted as opportunism, following the erratic behavior of the Az-Kallak defenders, was in fact a meticulously planned and executed plot to destroy the battle group.
Exassus Primary.
Analysis has shown that they were presented with more effective means to destroy the Cassus Belli prior to this point.
Exassus Tactical.
Your analysis is inverted because you have proceeded from the basis of destruction.
Exassus Primary. Inquiry. Exassus Tactical.
The conspirators plan to deliver the Cassus Belli into the service of the Eight Woods Conduit.
Exassus Secondary.
The traitors do not wish to destroy the Cassus Belli. They wish to subvert it to their cause. Every act carried out has been arranged in such a manner as to lead towards the isolation of the Imperator for that end. Had they merely turned their guns upon the battlegroup, they would have been outmatched. By this means, they have been able to alter the balance of power within the battlegroup so that the Imperator is the deciding factor, not the minority.
Exassus Tactical.
Unless the rest of the battle group arrive individually, a small probability, two warlord titans are insufficient to match them for kill potential. The Cassus Belli must become directly involved in the destruction of the Legio battle group. We must prevent that.
Exassus Secondary.
I have just recalled a routine I archived earlier. I suggested that the attack on the Acropolis was doomed to failure, but perhaps aimed at drawing troops away from the defense of the bastions from another force on the ground. No such second wave transpired, and so I idled the simulation. I was right, however, but not in determining the final purpose. The fighting was indeed intended to empty the bastions, not for a direct enemy assault, but to predicate the necessity of bringing aboard Alvatia and her augmentati.
Exassus Primary.
If one follows the logic you have established, then our Scutari were deemed a threat to the successful completion of their treachery. The strength of the battle group is uncertain. We are still best placed to disrupt their plans.
Exassus Tactical.
Positioning is important, but of no value if one does not have the troops to exploit it. I have analyzed the simulations you ran when confronted by Alvatia's ultimatum. While improvements could be made, the conclusion was correct. The Scutari under your command are insufficient to defeat the League forces.
Exassus Secondary.
The fate of everyone aboard the Cassus Belli is at stake. Is it possible to reach outside the established military structure to create a new auxilia?
Exassus lacked the equations to fully process that possibility, but as we attempted preliminary simulations, we trawled through the data logs scraped from Mithras IV's archive. We filtered relevant information through to the tactical persona, hoping that some fresh initiative not present in the earlier simulations might be found. Exassus Tactical.
A cluster of coded noospheric signals around the plasma chamber. I do not recognize the League ciphers, but several data blurts pertain to the tech priests of the Cassus Belli. Given their sudden intensity, it is a high probability that some crisis is occurring with the plasma reactor. Focus on the disruption there.
An intrusive data spike interrupted their deliberations. Exasus Tactical fended off an inquiring data spear from the Nuosphere, looping back Mithras IV's own secularity protocols to assure the system that nothing had changed. It was a finite response. Eventually, the Nuospheric link would detect the anomaly, but Exasus estimated that they had at least 30 standard minutes before their intrusion would be detected. Previously, 30 minutes would have sounded like an age to Exasus. Now, it sounded like a worryingly short time to save the casus belli.
"What is your name, Tributi?"
"Gelsa Vingeint, Your Holiness,"
she replied with an automatic bow of her head.
"You have done a great service to the Machine God this day, Gelsa Vingeint."
The Promedius turned to face the crowd that had gathered about them.
"Heretics are attempting to take possession of the casus belli. That cannot be allowed. The augmentati of the renegades will know what has happened here, and even now are preparing their response. We do not have much time. The Imperator must never fall into the hands of the traitors. To prevent this, we will initiate a fatal error in the reactor systems."
The tech priest turned towards one of the upper banks and snarled a stream of binaric at the servitors stationed there. The near-lifeless Hue machines roused into ponderous action, burbling command codes as their jolting fingers worked at the reactor controls. Gelsa looked at the other down-deckers and saw their confusion and hesitation.
"We don't have a choice," she said.
She fixed a stare on Adrina. What was she to say? That she had met an inquisitor of the Imperium, helped him clamber up the Imperator to the Acropolis, survived an invasion of traitor space marines, made a pact with the Armageddon tunnel fighters, been escorted by a castellan into the holy decks, survived near execution by the Hyperesia, and witnessed that same inquisitor slain by a renegade Magos, whose troops were now attempting to take over the down decks.
"Do you trust me?"
she asked instead. Adrina had no time to answer. A warning clamor screamed into life, and alert lights bathed the battle with a scarlet hue. The reactor overload had begun. A raucous howl of the reactor alarms drowned out all other noise and threatened to shake the thoughts right out of Gelsa's head. The other down-deckers covered their ears, stumbling towards the exits, but she forged towards Sushis Gan. The tech priest was surveying the scene without any indication that he'd understood the pain the noise inflicted.
"Shut it off!"
screeched Gelsa, the effort of raising her voice sending jarring spasms through her jaw.
"It's deafening us!"
The tech priest looked at her with multi-lensed eyes, and a second later the wailing ceased. Gelsa let out a gasp, almost choking on the comparative silence.
"Touch the tech priest."
Gelsa thought she had heard a voice, but other than Sushis Gan, there was nobody near her. She started to turn away, but the voice came again, halting her.
"Make physical contact with the tech priest."
Gelsa felt a throbbing in her brow, not quite pain, more like a steady pressure that seeped between her eyes.
"Stay there."
Not sure what else to do, Gelsa remained where she was, looking around the plasma chamber for some indication of who was speaking. Near mindless servitors labored at their controls, and the down-deckers gathered around Adrina and the other surviving overseer were discussing what they were going to do. The tech priest suddenly froze, mechadendrites in mid-undulation. Then the body half-turned as the Promedius took a step away from Gelsa. The tech priest twisted back, a clawed hand reaching up towards Gelsa's face. She stepped back, but Sushis Gan lunged after her, snaring her coverall. A glinting data spike flashed upwards, and Gelsa flinched, sure that its tip would pierce her throat. The slender spike lightly touched her godplate. The contact was like being struck by a bolt of lightning. Nerves buzzing, Gelsa stood transfixed, as if the data spike had been driven into her brain. Her exoskeleton twitched, juddering her body and limbs. Her fingers spasmed, and the multi-tool dropped loudly to the deck. Immaterial fingers quested into her thoughts, numbing with their touch, paralyzing any effort to speak or move. The fingers became wire-like probes that spread into her consciousness.
There was no pain, but the fear of intrusion was very real. Tears rolled down Gelsa's cheeks as she felt the probe's invasive presence pushing deeper and deeper. They found her memories, and in moments emptied her of everything she had been. She experienced her life in swift reverse, from the battle against the Skitari, through her encounter with Harkus, and onwards, back into her cult Metallica initiation, and all the way through to her childhood and birth. Everything she had experienced, every moment that had led up to her being the person she was there and then, was pillaged, sifted, and then thrust back into her memory. Teeth gritted, she waited for the exploratory influence to depart. She stared at the tech priest, thrusting the data spike against her forehead, but Sushus Gan was as immobile as Gelsa. The tributi expected disconnection, but instead felt a build-up of pressure as an influx of information flowed from the other presence. As she had relived her own existence, now she lived another. The earliest memories were vague, time spent among the temples of Metallica with others of the upper hierarchy. Accepted into the ranks of the tech priesthood, she started to study the paths of wisdom, replacing more and more of her body with cybernetic components, until eventually her brain itself was removed, redundant alongside the miracle of the machine god's artifice that she had become. Battles flashed past, an unending war fought in numbers and equations she could not possibly understand. And then she stood before the Casus Belli, filled with an all-too-human pride in her achievement. More war, now as a tech priest aboard the Imperator. Skitari came and went, each a fleeing life spent in the service of the Omnissiah. She endured. Until now. All that she had witnessed and been told now made sense. She learned of the Moderatus Prime and Magos Alvatia and the Dark Mechanicus that worshipped the warp as a living god. And the blaze of recollection finished with her imprisonment in the magazine structure within the Acropolis of the Casus Belli. The voice returned, but now with a sharp clarity, as though the speaker were literally at her ear. Yet it was not sound, or even speech, but data being processed, swifter than any words. Exasus Tactical.
Apologies for the manner of my introduction. Data exchange was the swiftest means to appraise myself of your history and to inform you of mine.
Gelsa Tributi.
How? Who are you? What is happening?
Exasus Tactical.
You know who I am. I have implanted an adequate portion of my thought stream within your biological archive.
For a moment, Gelsa wasn't sure what a biological archive was, but then realized the other person meant her memories. That simple realization unfolded the entirety of the data packet that Magos Dominus Militaris Jauzanus Gitara Ziliarchis Exasus had inserted into her brain. She did not experience it as she had during the inload, but remembered it as though she had perhaps learned its details from a tutor. Gelsa Tributi.
You are, were, the Magos Dominus. You have been ousted by the other one, Alvatia, and are trapped inside the Acropolis. You have temporarily taken over Sushus Gan's functions to initiate my nuospheric link, so that we can communicate. I did not even know I had a nuospheric link.
Exasus Tactical.
Why else would you have been gifted a godplate, if not to become closer to the machine god?
Gelsa Tributi.
I do not understand why you have contacted me. You have Sushus Gan. Why not use her to help you?
Exasus Tactical.
Though Sushus Gan is currently uncorrupted, that cannot be guaranteed for the future. She may come under attack via the Nuosphere and be turned against the Casus Belli.
Gelsa Tributi.
But haven't you just activated my link? Why am I less vulnerable?
Exasus Tactical.
You are unknown. We data scraped Alvatia during my brief link with her and registered the Inquisitor's demise. By reviewing archival security data, we identified you as a prior companion. The disturbance in the plasma chamber drew our attention and provided opportunity. I have ensured that only physical contact can activate your noospheric capabilities. You will, to put it in a way you will understand, be invisible on the noosphere. I need you to gather as many of your co-workers as possible and break into the Acropolis. As part of the attack, you must free us from the magazine. We will then be able to effect a better resolution to the current situation.
Gelsa Tributai.
Sushaskan has already initiated a reactor overload. We would rather destroy the Casus Belli than allow it to fall into the traitor's hands.
Exasus Tactical.
I understand. Permit me a moment.
The presence partially withdrew. In its absence, Gelsa realized that the entire exchange had lasted less than a second. Before she could think about this any further, she felt the re-emergence of the other mind. Exasus Primary.
I have reviewed the data, and I believe there is another way to resolve this attack.
Gelsa Tributai.
Can you reverse the overload command?
Exasus Primary.
I will do so before I relinquish influence over Sushaskan. Instead of a full overload, I will activate the core leak alarm system.
Gelsa Tributai.
That will cause an evacuation of the downdecks.
Exasus Primary.
Precisely the desired outcome. Olvatius Augmentati will also heed the alarm, allowing swift movement from the maintenance sectors to the Acropolis. You will use the distraction to initiate violence against the Augmentati and to proceed to the magazine area to free me.
Gelsa Tributai.
And if we fail, will you be able to restart the reactor overload?
Exasus Primary.
There is only a marginal probability that that will be possible. When I reverse Sushaskan's protocols, it is likely that Heretic Tech Priest will seek to close off the system to prevent a repeat attempt at self-destruction.
Gelsa Tributai.
You'll risk the Casus Belli becoming corrupted?
Exasus Primary.
Yes. I have made a choice. I believe we can save the Imperator.
Gelsa Tributai.
Believe? What are the chances of success? Have you calculated them?
Exasus Primary.
I have not. I am making an assumption. I require your assistance to reverse an absolute zero possibility of saving the Casus Belli.
Gelsa wasn't sure she could do it. What did she know about leading an attack? Could she even convince the others to take part? Exasus Primary.
Time is a critical factor, Gelsa Vinjaint. I believe you are the best assistance I can acquire at this time. Your conduct in the previous hours has shown loyalty to the Casus Belli beyond your duties, and your actions since the rescue of Inquisitor Harkus have shown above-average temperament and determination.
Gelsa Tributai.
Above average? You'll make me blush.
The silence that was forthcoming betrayed Exasus's lack of understanding, but the joke had bought her the short amount of time she needed to come to a decision. Gelsa Tributai.
Fake the reactor leak. I do not know how, but I will come for you, and together we are going to save the Casus Belli.
The renewed wailing of the reactor leak sirens nearly drowned out the snap of weapons fire and the bellows of the downdeckers as they surged along gantries, pounded up stairwells, and flowed like a wave from commandeered conveyors. Among them, the tech priest, still loyal to the Omnissiah, shouted instructions, but it was evident that they were no longer in control. The mob had a will of its own, stirred up by the Augmentati assault and after some impassioned pleas set into motion by Gelsa. She had no interest in personally leading the attack, and had kept Exasus's predicament secret for the time being. First, they had to break into the Acropolis, and when that was done, she would work out how to rescue the Magos. Before severing the connection, Exasus had activated a chronometer relay inside Gelsa's brain. It had been set to 14 minutes and 15 seconds standard chronoscape, which was the amount of time the Magos could continue to work through the noospheric systems of the tech priest they had suborned of his purpose. After that, the traitors would know that we had managed to contact the outside and would reinforce the protection of the magazine, or simply execute the former Dominus as an unnecessary threat. Gelsa was simply aware of the passage of time. It wasn't a ticking in her head or something she could see. She just knew, as she hauled herself up a narrow stair that curved around the hellstorm cannon mounting,
that she only had 8 minutes and 4 seconds remaining. She passed bodies, both white-coated soldiers and those of Tributi and Epilectos. It took an effort to remember that they had been people once. It made her wonder if this was how Harkus had felt all the time. Did the humans he had striven to protect simply become statistics weighed against each other? Gelser and the others around her came upon the upper landing, the doors already broken down, a scattering of dead augmentati in the corridor beyond. Laz fire ahead attracted her attention.
"Those aren't radium beams or arc rifle pulses."
"What would you know?"
asked Adrina, who had chosen to stay close to Gelser for reasons undisclosed. Perhaps it was simply because she was the only one with any sense of what was happening.
"I spent most of the last day in or near a firefight, one way or the other. Laz guns mean the Zanagia. They can help, I hope."
The corridor split at a junction ahead, serving another stairwell and one of the lower secondary gun turrets. Fighters, clad in the dark grey of the Armageddon Auxilia, held the bottom of the stairs, firing up at targets out of Gelser's line of vision. Two of them turned as the small mob dashed across the junction, their las guns raised.
"Wait!" shouted Gelser. "Don't shoot!"
"Stay there!"
One of the duct fighters bellowed back, stress etched into his features, his eyes roaming from one Deleuze to another.
"Stay back! I need you to contact Azad or Dazi," Gelser said, trying to sound in control. "Have you got a Voxhaler?"
"Don't need one,"
said the other Armageddonite. She looked back up the stairs and shouted,
"Lieutenant Azad!"
A fresh flurry of lasfire from unseen combatants above lit the stairwell. A few seconds later, the tunnel fighter, who had saved Gelser from the traitor legionary, came dashing down the steps.
"What is it, Kaduza? They're countering along the third level."
He saw Gelser and stopped, his eyes narrowing.
"What are you doing here?" "I need your help,"
Gelser said hurriedly. She stepped closer and dropped her voice as much as she could and still be heard above the shouts and gunfire echoing down the stairs.
"The rightful Dominus has been taken prisoner by the heretics."
Azad looked at her with his head tilted. His gaze moved to the others from the downdecks.
"Can you pull a trigger?"
he asked, and was answered with nods and calls of assent. He jabbed a finger towards the bodies close at hand, and then to several corpses in the doorway of the gun tower.
"Good. Get a weapon and follow me."
Some of the Deleuze were more eager than others. A few looked with distaste at the corpses and slunk away, the rush of blood that had carried them this far dissipating in the cold truth of battle.
"Dazi is 2 levels up, but the enemy have split us. Where is the Dominus being held?"
"The main battery magazine," said Gelser. "I don't even know if he was guarded. If he was locked in."
Azad puffed out his cheeks as he contemplated his options.
"You and you,"
he nodded to the other duct fighters.
"Take these new volunteers up to the fighting. Vox the Major and tell her I'm coming another way. Get her to push towards Shaft 4. Gelser, you should come with me."
He headed under the lowest flight of steps, while others pounded up the stairs with the auxilia. There was a hatch set into the wall, just about large enough for Gelser.
"The heretics have been sending armed servo skulls into most of our ratways, but this one should be fine."
"Should be?"
"There are no certainties in battle, Gelser."
The ring lock creaked as he turned it, but the door opened almost silently on its heavy hinges, revealing a lightless round tube running vertically past the opening.
"Where does it go?"
asked Gelser, leaning forward for a better look. She felt warm air rising, and the metal below them was lit with a faint, ruddy glow. Above, she saw a paler light beyond a grill some distance away. Azad pulled her back with a hand on her arm.
"Down into the lower incineratum, from the forward maintenance temple."
He twisted and stepped into the space, his legs braced across the drop. Gelser could barely see him as he started walking up, his back sliding against the wall of the chute.
"I don't expect anyone is going to be dropping rubbish down here during a battle, but best not dawdle."
Gelser slipped her multi-tool into its sheath and inspected the tube. There was no sign of handholds. She would have to ascend like the duct fighter, though she was far bulkier.
More gingerly than the Armageddon veteran, she placed a foot on the lip of the entrance, turned and pushed back, expecting to lose her footing and plummet into the flames at any moment. She felt the metal of the tube on her back and straightened as much as possible. Barely lifting her foot away, her exoskeleton wheezing, the bars scraping metal as she moved, Gelser slid up her free foot, her arms braced to either side. She looked up. Azad nearly eclipsed the light from the grill at the top, almost at his destination.
"All I've done today is climb things," Gelser muttered.
7 minutes and 48 seconds remained. Grunting with effort, she started to walk up the waste duct, her strides lengthening as her confidence grew.
Chapter 13. The Final Battle Begins. There was little else Exassus could do except wait to see if Gelser Vinjaint and the improvised army of Duluz and Zenagia could prevail. It had been a significant risk operating through the tech priest Sushus Gan, but circumstance had allowed no alternative. Navi allowed herself to gradually seep out into the Nuosphere again, assembling a data feed from 1,000 tiny contacts. It took several seconds to establish coordinate links, but once Exassus Tactical was able to permeate the Nuospheric membrane of one of Olvatia's coterie, the wider systems of the Imperata rose like glorious celebration lights before her. What we discovered was discouraging. One of the Legio Furians Reavers had returned from the pursuit of the Warhounds. Whether this was due to success or continuing failure was unknown. Two Legio Metallica warlords, the Omnisire's Temper and Indomitable Guardian, had emerged from the storm, and a furious battle raged to the left of the Casus Belli between the evenly matched forces. Void shields shimmered, battered with energy and shell by their opposing counterparts, while in the distance the traitor Reaver hurriedly returned, full power directed to its motive engines. Exassus Secondary.
There is a high probability that the followers of the Eightwoods Way expected to have full control of the Imperator by now. If not for the rebellion in the lower decks, the Casus Belli would be firing upon our former companions.
Exassus Primary.
Even so, the field is unfairly set. If the Legio continues to arrive individually, they will pose no significant threat to the traitors. The decision to avert destruction of the Casus Belli is vindicated if we can restore order.
A barrage of rockets soared across the desolate basin and engulfed one of the Tiger-Eyes Titans in a cascade of fire and smoke. Flickers of purple void shield energy flared through the deluge. On the very edge of awareness, the Casus Belli hungered for action, infecting Exassus with warrior thoughts. Exassus Secondary.
It is not enough to prevent the intervention of the Casus Belli. We must deliver the Imperator back to the service of the Legio Metallica, or simply stand witness to the destruction of the battle group.
Exassus Tactical.
It is likely that, as well as Titans, the Legio Furians has brought Heretic Guard for support. In time, they will be able to board the Casus Belli and achieve what we have so far denied Gevran, Olvatia, and their fellow traitors. Time is not our ally.
Exassus Primary.
The command module will be sealed against us. Security protocols have changed. It is impossible to control the Casus Belli external to the Princeps and Moderati stations.
Exassus Secondary.
I will devote myself to analysis of this problem.
The persona faded into near obscurity, leaving Exassus to monitor the ongoing battle. Having realized that the Casus Belli would be of no assistance, the two Legio Metallica warlords had closed together and merged shields. Their advance was slowed by the maneuver, but they plodded onwards, attempting to bring their shorter-ranged and close-combat weaponry into action against the traitors. The Legio Furians pair split, breaking left and right to come at the faithful engines from both sides. This divided the warlords' fire, rendering half of their weapons useless unless they turned to focus on one of their attackers, which in turn would expose their backs to the other. With the traitor Reaver still closing, the Legio Metallica god machines turned back to back, each concentrating what fire they could on a circling warlord.
Doubtless they were desperately broadcasting reinforcement requests into the Stormfront, and hoping that more of the Legio would soon emerge before they were outclassed. Merging the shields appeared to be working for the time being. Giving each warlord, in effect, 12 void shields granted them time to repair overloaded generators before their full energy defenses were overwhelmed. The overlapping domes of power and conflicting energy signals made it hard to discern exactly how many banks of shielding they had left, but Exasus estimated it was 8 or 9. With a burst of scintillating red, the Reaver unleashed the twin beams of its turbo laser destructor. The paired pulse screeched across Cassus Belli's sensor array and struck the warlord's shield wall. Within the coruscating hemispheres, Exasus detected energy spikes that signified a double overload. 6 shields left, V decided, erring on the side of pessimism. The edge of the storm not far behind the Imperator was a wall of blankness on the scanners, described in negative by the continual flickering of electromagnetic discharge. Exasus sifted through the data for any sign of approaching Titans, as no doubt the tech priests in the Zella were also. It was impossible to tell what was a storm strike and what might be the energy signature of a plasma reactor. In the ongoing battle, it appeared that the 2 faithful princeps had decided to do as much damage to the enemy as possible before they succumbed to the inevitable superiority of their opponents. War sirens howling their resistance, they turned together, bringing their largest guns to bear on the incoming Reaver. Gatling blaster rounds screamed out from the Omnisire's temper, while its companion powered up a devastating shot from its plasma destructor. The simultaneous impacts enveloped the traitor Reaver in a hemisphere of blue fire, the cataclysmic energy surge blotting it from detection for several seconds. In the following moments, the indomitable Guardian broke from the Omnisire's temper and turned to face directly towards the Legio Furian traitor. In place of the Zella command module, the Warlord had a center-line deathstrike cannon. The Moderati and other command crew relocated in a special control tower mounted upon the carapace. The cannon, more properly suited to bombarding fortifications, erupted with a single blast of thunderous anger. Exasus tracked the shell's progress via the Cassus Belli's detector screen, following its trajectory directly into the Reaver's chest. The detonation physically buckled the enemy Titan, causing it to step backwards, its princeps struggling to maintain balance. Burning oil fell like fiery blood from the gaping rent in the Reaver's chest, a storm of sparks and the gleam of venting plasma lighting the wound from within, quickly blotted out by a pall of black smoke. Exasus shared a moment of triumph with the Cassus Belli, as the Magos saw through the Imperator's artificial eyes the Reaver toppling sideways, its hip shearing away under the incredible torsion of its displaced weight. Another volley of Gatling blaster fire raked into the carcass, thudding anti-tank shells into the head and exposed central cavity. The sensation of achievement was short-lived. Excoriating las fire from the remaining traitors surged across the indomitable Guardian's last void shield, the final beams of the salvo striking welts across the red-painted carapace. Exasus sensed the power build-up of a volcano cannon readying to fire, preparing an execution shot. Princeps Odrazda of the Omnisire's temper evidently judged the same. His warlord surged forward, void shields crackling as the crew within called upon the miracles of the machine god to protect their engine. The Omnisire's temper interposed itself between the firing warlord and the indomitable guardian as the volcano cannon snarled its deadly beam. Instead of punching through the head or reactor of the stricken warlord, the beam of energy crashed against operational void shields, its titan-slaying power diverted into the warp for the relatively minor cost of another overloaded generator. 2 warlords faced 2 warlords, though the Legio Furian engines had restored most of their shields. Exasus's thoughts returned to the absent traitor Reaver and the 2 warhounds of the Legio Metallica. A circumspect analysis of the communication data logs revealed nothing that could point to the fate of the other engines, and hence which, if any, might return to swing the balance of the ongoing battle. Azad crouched at the top of the trash channel, the grill pushed aside. He offered a hand and then withdrew it as Gelsa hauled herself into the maintenance temple. The auxiliar signaled for her to be quiet with a finger to his lips.
Gelser had never been inside such a place before. It was bedecked in friezes, like much of the Acropolis, the images depicting manufacture and construction. She recognized several vistas from Metallica, though she had never been there. The immense domes of the Oraculars of Delphi, where immense defense satellites were constructed, the launch fields that sent them up to orbiting transporters, a flat expanse the size of a small town beside them. A girder-wreathed tower was the forge works at Nyxeros, erected atop the summit of an active volcano, the lava channels down the slope flanked by machinery and forge levee. Among the artistry stood lines of benches laden with disassembled weapons, pieces of armor and cybernetics. Lascutters and sonic drills hung on racks alongside microforges on jointed legs, while from the ceiling drooped a profusion of cables ending in lenses, blades, and equipment beyond Gelser's interpretation. They had emerged in a corner of the chamber which connected to another via a broad archway whose lintel was inscribed with Metallican runes. Gelser could not read them, but assumed they were some prayer to the Omnissiah, or a blessing of the machine god.
"Nobody home," she said, remembering to keep her voice down all the same. "The climb wasn't easy, but no obstacle for tunnel fighters. Why haven't you come through this way before?"
"We tried," Azad said, and pointed towards the next chamber.
Through the legs of a bench, just on the other side of the arch, Gelser saw a grey mass. It took a few seconds for her to translate what she saw into two bodies, one atop the other. Blood had dried on the floor around them, and there were splinter marks.